Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Open Observability Talks. I'm your host, Dotan Horvitz, and here at Open Observability Talks, we talk about anything DevOps, observability, and open source. So may the open source be with you. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Logs.io, the cloud-native observability platform. Logs.io takes the best-of-breed open source projects such as Prometheus, OpenSearch, and Jaeger, and offers them as a unified observability platform built for scale. For those joining the live stream on YouTube or Twitch, feel free to share questions and comments on the chat to make things more interesting, especially for today's episode. That's a recap for KubeCon that probably many of you have been there. And with that, let's go on to today's episode. We just had KubeCon Europe last month in Paris. I even put on the t-shirt for the occasion. And today I'll recap the main highlights you should definitely not miss. With a fellow CNCF ambassador, Thomas Schutz. On the second part of the show, I'll zoom in on Kate's GPT, which is a cool new project that uses generative AI for Kubernetes operations, essentially. Thomas is a core maintainer of the project, so a great opportunity to hear that and about the project and what it is about, where it's heading, straight from the source, straight from the maintainer, as we do on this show. And let me invite Thomas to the stream. Hey, Thomas. Good morning.
Yes. Hello, Totan.
Great having you here. And always fun having another CNCF ambassador on the show. Where are you joining us from?
So I'm from Austria. So in the near Vienna.
Nice. And you're a man of many titles and many talents. I only mentioned a few. So do you want to tell us, the audience, what I missed?
Yes. So as Totan said before, my name is Thomas. I'm working as a principal cloud architect at an Austrian company called Kapsch, and there I'm dealing lots of with cloud providers themselves, with Kubernetes and so on. And furthermore, as Totan said before, I have many roles on my many heads, and so I am also teaching nearby on two universities of applied sciences, mainly in the scope of Kubernetes, GitOps, and so on. Furthermore, yes, I am a CNCF ambassador and working for some open source projects such as Kate's GPT, and I'm also in the governance committee of Captain.
Nice, and definitely we'll use your many hats on the recap, because you touched and you are related to many of the news there. Before we go on to KubeCon recap, I wanted to just say something on the hot news that are in these days, and definitely I want to, it's not part of the show, but very important to highlight in the open source sphere in general. If you haven't heard, Redis Labs decided to take Redis off the open source path, essentially decided to relicense Redis to a dual non-open source license, both SSPL and Redis's proprietary RCAL, as they call their license. So definitely significant news for many who are in this sphere. I'm going to also post something here for those on the live chat that you can follow along. And also, since then, a few forks popped up to keep it open, to keep Redis open. The first and maybe most prominent is Valky, that was formed by major players in the industry, including AWS, Google Cloud, Oracle, Ericsson, Snap, and others. And also, many of the Redis maintainers, those that are not on the Redis Labs Corp, joined this as maintainers. So good. And then also, very importantly, formed under the Linux Foundation from day one. So very interesting to also to see the forking activity. We've been escorting forking activity on this show for other projects, and you know definitely the dynamics. This is one fork. Another fork is about was initiated by Microsoft. They call it Garnet. Another interesting candidate. Another one is Redict. So definitely lots of activity there, and maybe begs the question that I've asked a few times here on the show, and even in an article that I wrote a few years back, of whether vendor-owned open source is an oxymoron. So we get more evidence to the topic, and definitely needing to dive into this topic further. So stay tuned on this one. And with that, I want to go back to the main topic of this episode. And as I said, we'll start with a recap of KubeCon Paris that just took place last month, March 2024 in Paris, and lots of news there. First, I wanted to talk about very interesting collateral that came out of the AI Working Group, which is a new white paper, Cloud Native Artificial Intelligence white paper. And the white paper helps understand essentially the changing cloud native artificial intelligence ecosystem. So in essence, all the opportunities, all the components, if you are in the CNCF ecosystem, this is definitely, and you're interested into that, that's definitely something that you'd like to explore further. I'm pasting here a link to the blog post by the CNCF that gives all the details and the link to the white paper on that one. As I mentioned, credits go to the AI working group and also for the TAG runtime, which the working group is under. TAG is the technical advisory group. So the TAG runtime under which the AI working group was founded. And as I mentioned on the second part of the episode, we'll talk about using Gen AI for Kubernetes operations and the Kates GPT. So stick around. Thomas, did you have a chance to have a look at this white paper? Any insights on that one?
Yes. So I took a short look on it, and I also heard about one keynote at the KubeCon, so I was there. And at the moment, you can say that I think AI is eating the world, and also the Kubernetes and cloud native world. And there are so many use cases around AI in the whole Kubernetes space, from observability, from scheduling, and so on. So there are many things we could do with observability, with generative AI, and so on in the whole cloud native space. So I think this is definitely a thing where people should take a look on. And as I will talk later, at the moment there was no home for such things in the CNCF and in the cloud native space. And for that, the AI working group is a perfect thing.
Yeah, so great work by the TAG runtime. And from TAG runtime to another TAG, another technical advisory group, the TAG app delivery. And really happy to have you as a member of that TAG, and can tell us firsthand. So lots of updates came out of that. Do you want to lead us through some of these major updates?
Yes. So I think this was a header I forgot for, before. So I'm also a co-chair of the CNCF TAG app delivery. And for me, the whole KubeCon part was mainly about talking to people, meeting people, which you normally only meet online. And therefore, we got to many new opportunities and many new initiatives we could start with. So for instance, when you are thinking about app delivery in the whole cloud native space, it's mainly you might think it's mainly about getting the things on the system. But we found out that there are many things below the top of the iceberg, which we should take care of, such as APIs, SDKs, and so on. And there were always proposals to get this into the tech space. But we, as the tech app delivery, often had the problem that we didn't know, does this fit to our scope, and so on. And at KubeCon, we decided to create a new working group for application development in the tech app delivery. And this is currently a work in progress. So there are many, many people involved at the moment who try to get a charter. I think you will get the link afterwards, right? And if you are interested in joining this working group or getting your ideas to this, feel free to join. And I think this will be a very cool thing.
And maybe just for people to understand, the TAG app delivery has lots of domains of expertise in the areas. So if you'll just chart the main charter of the, and I also post it here for the people on the live stream, the charter of the TAG.
This is for the working group, yes. So for the TechApp delivery itself, the scope is mainly in delivering applications to cloud native systems. So when you're thinking in projects, this might be such projects as Flux, as Argo City, maybe some pipeline tools and so on. But also about build-related things. For instance, Helm is also a project for templating, which is falling in the scope of the tech. Also, such projects as build packs to build such application bundles and so on are lying in the scope of the tech. So, as you might have noticed in the last few minutes, the scope of the tech is very broad. And it might also be that the app development working group gets a tag in the future, but this is a thing we have to point out.
Yeah, and you wanted to mention exploring another working group, right?
Yes. So a second chance we got was that we discussed a bit with folks from the Project Atlantis, which is for delivering infrastructure as code. And the second one was we talked a bit to folks from the OpenTofu project. If it would make sense to get a working group for infrastructure provisioning into the tech. And as this also is in the scope of it, and at the moment we are also trying to investigate where they could help, what could be the scope, what could be the outcome, and so on. So also, if you are interested in joining such efforts, we are always open for proposals and so on.
Nice. And I also pasted here on the live chat link to the KubeCon talk recording from Tag App Delivery. I think you had the pleasure of being there on stage amongst others. So for those who want to hear more about the updates from Tag App Delivery, a great talk from KubeCon. And let's move on to another major update from the Istio project on the service mesh front. Istio announced the beta release of Ambient Mode. Very exciting. Actually, if you want to learn more about Istio Ambient Mode, the milestone and the roadmap, check out the episode we had here on the show with Lin Sun, a member of Istio's steering committee and director of open source at Solo.io, which was a great intro on the ambient mesh. And obviously, they gave more updates. They had a whole co-located event dedicated to that also as part of KubeCon. So lots of updates there. Another update that I want to mention is about FluentBit. FluentBit released a major release, version 3, with lots of interesting parts in it. New filters for Windows, macOS, and macOS metrics. A new SQL-based parser for searching and transforming logs. And also supporting HTTP 2 for those who are past the HTTP 1.1 and want to move forward. Now you can do that also with FluentBit and many others. So again, pasting here, we've been following FluentBit as part of Open Observability Talks for quite some time. So great to see that. And in general, great to see FluentBit development carrying on full force also after the acquisition of Calyptia by Chronosphere a few months ago. Calyptia is the company that founded the FluentBit, the creators, and the driving force. So congrats to the teams on this major release. Now another thing that you're an expert on, Captain. We had a designated episode about Captain also here on the show with Andreas a while back, but Thomas is also a member of the governing committee of the project. So maybe, Thomas, you can lead us through some of the major updates on the Captain project. Just maybe a brief reminder for those who don't know Captain, and then we'll talk about the updates.
Yes, so just to set the scene a bit, so Captain is also a CNCF incubating project, which is there for getting more confidence into your deployments, for executing tasks before and after your deployment, and also do some evaluations and so on, which is a perfect fit for this observability talk.
For sure.
In the last few months, there were many efforts taken into getting more promotion tasks, so making promotion possible with it. So many of you who are aware of GitOps and so on might have noticed that promotion is not always so easy. Therefore, the Captain team added an additional promotion stage into their tooling. So this can also be done with Captain now very easily. And I was pretty excited about this. And what we also did with Captain and what's now a bit easier was that we are trying to build some kind of application awareness into Kubernetes. So for instance, when we are talking about Kubernetes, we know about deployments, stateful sets, and so on. We know about pods, but we don't know about the big whole thing. And this is a thing which Captain tried to solve from the first day. And in the meanwhile, the very cool thing is that we can use Kubernetes recommended labels to detect applications, to detect their dependencies, and so on, and to treat them as one. So for instance, you could do a promotion after the whole application is deployed. A second thing, and there was a talk from Andreas Grabner about it, was that we are always trying to get to integrate into Argo, trying to make deployments even with Argo and GitOps easier as they are. What we learned was that we have to integrate a bit better into the whole Argo tool stack. So not only for Argo CT, but also for rollouts, for workflows, and so on. And this has also been decided that we will move nearer to Argo CT and try to find out where we can integrate and how this could work. So there is also an issue for this. I think this is called Captain Loves Argo. And if you have questions about it, then feel free to comment on it.
Yeah, that's great. And I also posted here the link to the GitHub issue. Very interesting. If you're interested in that, definitely check out the issue and feel free to chime in on the GitHub discussion there. So that's on the Captain side. Another project, very interesting, Open Cost. I found it interesting that it introduced carbon costs. So great seeing Open Cost project that comes from the FinOps, traditional FinOps side, calculating how much it costs us to run our Kubernetes clusters, and depending on the infrastructure, whether bare metal, on-prem, hosted cloud, whatnot, expanding into environmental sustainability. Also, great collaboration between OpenCost and ThoughtWorks on this joint work to bring open source carbon emissions footprint monitoring across Kubernetes and cloud. So looking forward to seeing that. It's pretty early on, but if you are interested in this topic, also a good opportunity for you to maybe chime in to the discussion and see how you can do that. If you are new, by the way, to Open Cost project in general, do check out my episode here on the show with the community manager of Open Cost. Can give you a good background, not just for the sustainability part, but for the traditional core value of FinOps and calculating how much your Kubernetes clusters actually cost you with a breakdown per workloads, per namespaces, and so on, as you'd expect. So very interested this. Another part, again, one that you probably can chime in, open feature. We talked about it in the past here on the show as well, an open source for feature flagging that released, I guess the biggest announcement there was the Web SDK version 1, client-side support that has been added. I know that many of your colleagues have been there from your days at Dynatrace, so you might be in the loop on this. Do you have any insights on the open feature update?
Not too much at the moment, but what I found out was that open feature in the beginning was designed only to build feature flags on the server side of the story. And yes, in the over time, and these were also things I experienced throughout my time at Dynatrace, was that there was also always the need to have some kind of an SDK for client-side feature flagging. And this is a thing which has been released now. And I'm also very curious about trying this out at some point in time.
Yeah, so that looks interesting. I also pasted here the tech docs for the client side, as mentioned. So it started from server side. Now having this client side is really cool addition. So do check it out. Maybe one last note that we have before we need to switch over to the second part is about Perseus project that has released version 0.44. Perseus is a new contender, new project in the observability visualization, started from the metrics visualization, but with roadmap also beyond metrics to other observability signals. Formed originally under the Linux Foundation with aims to even join the CNCF. Very exciting. And with this new release, very interesting capabilities such as dashboard, there's code SDKs for Q and Golang, OAuth 2 authentication and others, ephemeral dashboards and more. So definitely very interesting to check it out. I'll paste the links here for the release. And in general, if you're new to Perseus, do check out my episode here on the show with a project's creator, so you can get some more background on the show. Do you have any experience with the project by any chance?
No, not really.
Yeah, so it's pretty young. So for those who are familiar with Grafana and others, it's not as mature. It's still a fairly young project, but very interesting, and the GitOps notions, dashboard as code, and concepts like that looks very interesting, as well as the fact that it's starting off the shelf as part of a foundational open source. Very interesting to look into. And with that, I'd like to move on to the second part, which is Kate's GPT. That's the highlight. I know that many people are really excited to hear more about that, so I'm really happy for the opportunity that you're with us. You're essentially the second maintainer of the project after Alex Jones. So you're the authority for that. So really glad to have you. And let's start with the basics. Like, tell us how you ended up involved in the project in the first place.
So this was a very, very funny story. So for new Alex from my work in the Tech App Delivery. And we also worked a bit in the Open Feature project, so we had to do something. And one time, Alex came to me and asked me if I want to do some work for a project called, which is working with AI troubleshooting in Kubernetes clusters. And I think one of my first reactions on this were, I don't know anything about AI. Yes, to be honest, I didn't know how to deal with this and how to work with it, but I said yes, show me the code. So and after some, so I saw the code and saw that the AI related part of the code of KGPT was about three lines, and I think yes, that's okay. That even I understand it. And this was a part where my engagement for KGPT started. So at the beginning, I also wrote some kind of some of the first analyzers to find some problem patterns in the Kubernetes clusters. And yes, from this the project evolved.
Nice. So and obviously credits to Alex Jones, who was the original creator of the project. As I mentioned, you're the second one to join, and Alex brings a lot of experience from the SRE realm. from JP Morgan Chase and Civo and many other companies. Today he's at AWS, so lots of experience, and obviously you with all your mileage from Dynatrace and from other work experience that's very relevant. You are definitely the right people to steer this and talk about it. So let's really talk about what it is. Like, what's the problem that it comes to solve? Where did this project come from? Even?
So I think many of you might know that troubleshooting in Kubernetes can be hard, and in many cases, or at least for me, this was the case. We are always searching for the same problems. So for instance, I often had the problem that I started a deployment, tried to get it run, no pods are there and so on. And in the end, I found out that a service account was missing. And these are things we have over and over. So in this case, what the main idea was to find such problem patterns in the Kubernetes environment. So for instance, I have a deployment or a replica set where the pods don't come up, and try to find out why this is the case, or where how I can find this out, and in the end, trying to get a description about the problem and an approach for solving these problems from with AI assistance. So one common misunderstanding of CageGPT was that we are taking every manifest we get, taking every data we get to the cluster, don't filter it and send it to an AI provider. So two things Alex and I as previous SREs and DevOps guys or system administrators or whatever, we always wanted to find out where are the problems, how can I filter out which is what is relevant for the problem solving process, and in the end send exactly this part, so the collected information, anonymize it as far as possible, send it over and try to get a really good description about how to solve it.
Nice.
And in the beginning, this was for very simple cases, such as I said before, for services, service accounts, so for services without endpoints and so on. In the meanwhile, it goes to external integrations and so on. So it gets larger and larger.
So the problem that we all know, it's not just you, it's I guess each and every one of us, probably our listeners, the fact that you're trying to understand what the heck is going on in my Kubernetes cluster, why it's not wired properly and everything like that. And the promise sounds very, very exciting. The promise of having some sort of a generative AI that can essentially, I can ask and it show the symptoms in a way and say what could be wrong, maybe even what the solution is, and get some insight, and we all try to do that very primitively with ChatGPT or other services, doing it on the using the web interface. But I think the value here is with the all the crunching that you do behind the scenes, which maybe you can tell us. So tell us how it works. So I understand the problem and what's the promise, the big promise of having this magical SRE advisor on your shoulder telling you what might be wrong, but how does it really work, the project?
So in fact, it does the same thing as you would do in troubleshooting on a Kubernetes cluster. So at first, we are trying to find out if any pods are not starting, if something if something is not working. So normally you would try to go to the pods, try to find out, are they running? Why are they not running? Try to pull something out of the event stream and so on. And if we find something which might be relevant for the problem solving process, so for instance, if you have a replica set where a service account is not there or whatever, then we simply store it at the first point. And the easiest thing you could do would be that you only print out exactly this information. So CageGPT at the first in its first version was only a very simple CLI. And the origins, so from the start, it didn't have any AI integration. So this was the funny part. But with the things we are collecting and with the more information we find, we can say yes, and I want to get these problems explained. And when you are telling CageGPT yes, explain this to me, then it takes all of this information, tries to anonymize as much information as possible. So for instance, pod names and so on. Sends this to an AI provider and gets back a result, and this is what we print out at the moment. As I said before, CageGPT in the beginning was only a CLI. After some time, we found out that it would be cooler to have an automated SRE assistant. So therefore, we started writing an operator for this, which runs in the cluster, which finds problems continuously, and also prints them out into a resource, and in further consequence also to other things.
Nice. So essentially now it's not a one-off, then when I see something, ask and tell me what's wrong, but also supervises on a continuous basis and flags proactively when things start getting out of the normal, let's put it this way.
So for instance, out of memory, things are not happening once.
Yeah.
So sometimes they can happen hours after you deploy the application.
Yeah.
And therefore it also makes sense to make this continuously.
Very nice. And also in terms of the context, so you, before sending it over to the engine, whichever engine it is, and we'll talk about it in a second, but there is a pre-processing that you do, like to make sure that all the information is available in the context of for the Gen AI, right? So can you tell us a bit about this context that you gather via the operator and other means to get the relevant context to the Gen AI?
So normally we are trying to find problems in a certain namespace. And then we take all of the informations and send them over in one bundle. So there is nothing, not really much magic around it. But it works. So
nice. So let's talk a bit about who's behind it, because essentially this, we see many projects. I mentioned even before on the KubeCon recap about projects such as Captain and the Open Feature and others that have like a very prominent company or vendor or maybe a few. Here it's a very different dynamics on the open source front, right? There's no company or a commercial entity behind it, no business plan. Tell us a bit about this part.
So the funny thing about KubeGPT, and this was also why I joined, was that there is no company behind it. So often, and as we'll hear afterwards, we also tried to get or got accepted into the CNCF sandbox. And the problem for such prerequisites and so on are sometimes that you need to fill in which company stands behind it. And behind KubeGPT, there is no company. So yes, we have contributors which are working for companies and companies which are integrating KubeGPT, but in fact there is no single company which governs KubeGPT. So at the moment it's a set of individuals, to be honest. I think most of us do it for fun to some extent. Some of us, yes, they integrated into their platforms, and that's also pretty okay. But there was no business plan behind it from the beginning, and this is the cool thing about this project. But this is also hard in terms of finding contributors, in terms of keeping them, and so on. So when we started with the whole project, and this was a story I forgot before, I think after the first day we had the first release, we had the first fork. So. and the nice thing about it, this was a fork for CI related stuff. So I think it was for finding GitLab problems in GitLab. And the nice thing about it was that the one who forked the project is now a member of the project itself. And this until now. And this is how the project works. So People are finding the project, find it cool, need some more information, or need some more features in it, contribute the features. If we have good luck, they stay. If not, they leave. But that's also not a big problem. I think that's how open source also should work to some extent. And I think this is pretty cool to work on such a project. And it's also a good starting point for people who want to get into open source. So Codebase is pretty easy. Yes, it gets more complicated over time, but it's very easy to contribute something and to get into a project.
We invite everyone from the listeners who have any passion, any relation to this topic, or if they find it useful enough for their own projects or companies to start investing as part of their own initiative, then definitely do that. What kinds of skill sets, programming languages, give us a bit maybe about the context of the tech stack that you used for the people to know if it's relevant for them?
Yes, so ChatGPT is written in Go. So if you feel comfortable with Go, you are the right person for it. Furthermore, we have an operator. So there we are working with KubeBuilder. We have some kind of communication between the operator and ChatGPT itself. I think this is done by a gRPC, but it's very so. There are very common tools in place. So this, as I said in the beginning, for me the starting point was three points of AI, three lines of AI code. So it's very easy to understand, and I think we did a good work in making it easy to contribute.
Nice. Well, it's more complex today than when you joined it. It was just three lines of code, but still, it's a good project to start. And I think one of the important things, maybe we can spend some time about that, is really the Gen AI engines integration, because this is really the power. This is the framework, but ultimately then relays the question to an external engine, whether a hosted one or a self-hosted or a local model or whatnot. And I know that you have by now already quite a rich suite of out-of-the-box integrations with the OpenAI that we mentioned a few times, but also Azure, Cohere, and others. Do you want to tell us a bit about the engines integrations that are already in place, and maybe in general about this part of the project?
Mm-hmm. So, as you said before, we in the meanwhile we have very, very many AI integrations. So after we started at the start, we only had OpenAI in place, and we found out very early that this might not be enough. So people might want to use Azure AI or local models and so on, and therefore we created interfaces and so on for AI integrations very early, and this. I think this is very easy for the AI providers themselves to integrate. So, for instance, I think the Google integration comes from people from Google, and the Amazon integrations also come from people from Amazon. So there is interest also from the providers themselves to get this in. And yes, therefore, and the mechanism behind it is always the same, right? So you're sending some kind of prompt to the provider and get back some information. Therefore, this was very easy to achieve. What we also had very, very in very early times, we had the first local AI integration, I think after 2 months or whatever. And this is also a thing which is very interesting when talking to people about ChatGPT, because they are always concerned about the things which get delivered to an AI provider.
Yeah.
And therefore, anonymization and local models might be are very interesting to this, for this. And there are also many some funny use cases around this from adopters.
So I think this is important, because we're talking about giving all the context that I asked you about before, which is context about your namespace and what runs there. And a lot of this context can also obviously relay confidential information about what you run, the workloads, and things like that. So many organizations that would have liked, under normal circumstances, utilize Gen AI for these sorts of supercharging their SREs, we're very reluctant because of that. So having the support for local models is a benefit. You mentioned the AWS donation. So actually you have integrations with both Amazon Bedrock and Amazon SageMaker, if I remember correctly. I'm just going over the list here. So Google Gemini that you mentioned, Gemini Vertex, OpenAI that we mentioned, Azure, Cohere, and of course the local models that you that you mentioned. So quite an impressive list of integrations that gives, and people can also compare and test. The idea is that once you have one framework in front of that abstracts that, they don't need to make a decision up front which one would be best. They can start by actually exploring several with the same questions, and then over time maybe converge on one that provides a better work for them, or carry on working with a few like the multi-clouds or multi-model, I guess, or something like that. So I guess this is also an advantage of the project itself. And maybe you can tell us a bit about the current state of the project, the features, the software maturity of the project. If people want to start experimenting, maybe even using it in real production issues, how much they can rely on that.
So the cool part about KitsGPT is we do not try to solve problems by ourselves. So it's a read-only tool to at the current state. Therefore, if you install the KitsGPT CLI and run KitsGPT Analyze, nothing happens. So the only thing which happens is, yes, it gets access to your Kubernetes cluster. But also, even if you don't want, you don't send anything to an AI provider. So the worst thing you could expect is that you find problems you were not aware of. And this was also a thing also Alex experienced. So at one point we wrote an analyzer for some resources. And Alex ran it and said, yes, this cannot be correct, but in the end it was correct.
Even experienced SREs such as yourself and Alex can be surprised by the insights of the KitsGPT, yeah?
Yes, but that's okay. Because everything which is running automatically is perfectly fine for me. And even I, when I create demos nowadays and so on, I also let KitsGPT analyze them and try to find out if I have some problem even before trying it out. So from a maturity perspective, I think the thing is more mature than someone would expect after 1 year. Yes, there might be room for improvement at some points. But as I said before, the cool part is if you install it and if you run analysis over the things, nothing can happen because KitsGPT doesn't write something. And in the worst case, you get some information you weren't aware of. From feature wise, yes, we have lots of providers at the moment, as Dotan said before. We have many integrations for Kubernetes default, for Kubernetes primitives themselves, so for services, network policies, for ingress controllers, and so on. So many things are in place. If you are missing something, we are always open for new ideas. And as I said before, it's very easy to contribute to it. Nice. Furthermore, we are integrating in external projects. So one of the first integrations we had was for Trivi. So you could install Trivi with KitsGPT and also get the results for Trivi with KitsGPT. But the whole integration part is about to change at the moment a bit.
But Trivi, just for those who don't know, more on the security front, if you want to say a word just for the context. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so very much things going on, and I think the project is pretty well developed at the moment.
Nice. I just pasted the GitHub link, so you can also, people can check out the GitHub link. In addition to there is a website for the project, so you have both of them on the live stream. And obviously, for those listening on the podcast apps, I will obviously put all the links also on the show notes. Don't worry about that. The version currently is version 0.3.29. So it's still not the 1.0, I guess, in terms of the software maturity, but as you said, it's already quite useful on the production cases as an advisory tool. And you also mentioned, by the way, as a side note, but we should definitely take a moment to appreciate this project is 1 year old. It actually celebrated the 1 year old, 1 year anniversary. I pasted a link to the tweet I put on that. That's really exciting to see that the project is already, I haven't realized until I saw that it's already 1 year old. So already quite a bit of mileage there. And congratulations to you, to Alex, and all the other maintainers and people involved for reaching this 1 year anniversary. Not many open source projects survive to get 1 year old. So it's for those with no maturity of open source projects, that's an important milestone there. Mm-hmm. And also, I think you talked about the response to the project back when you released that, and also actually today, like the you mentioned something like the first week that it came out in terms of the GitHub stars and likes and things like that, and also to this day, can you tell us a bit about this the excitement you saw and the traction around the project when you released it?
Mm-hmm. So. The funny part was we released the first screenshots and demos around the project before it has been released. So many people were curious, and we always showed cool use cases and so on. And everyone was excited about this project and wanted to get this at some point. And I think one day before we released it, Alex and I, we had a call and said, yes, let's do it, let's release it. There are only two things which can happen. So at first, it could be a big flop, so that many people see that, yes, it's very easy to use, but not as AI as someone might think. Or it goes pretty well and people like it. But to be honest, we were both not really prepared for so many good response about the project. So I think after, I'm not sure if it was 1 or 2 weeks, but we had, I think, around 1,000 GitHub stars. As I said before, the first fork was one day after we released it.
1,000 GitHub stars after 2 weeks. That's incredible.
And I think after some weeks, it were about 2,000 to 3,000 GitHub stars. And for new open source projects without companies behind it, this is pretty huge. And this, so for me, this was a pretty cool finding how open source projects could work. And also about from a marketing perspective how some could make it right. Yes.
So, and by the way, looking at the GitHub page today, I see today it's already 4,900 stars, or almost 5,000 stars, and 534 forks. So that's really impressive. Also today, 1 year after. That not only hasn't it declined, it actually picking up very, very nicely.
Yeah, so it doesn't rise linearly, but we always have some steps in it where people get aware of the project again, where we might release new features, or what people are really excited about, and sometimes people as you tell the people about the project, and this also drives the project. So also a big thank you to you for promoting this project.
Yeah, I was really excited to see that, and happy to share. I was happy to share it over Twitter for those who are followers, my followers on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on Mastodon, and so on. I was happy to share the different milestones, and obviously happy now to have you on the show for a full spotlight on this one. And also another very important milestone of the project was the acceptance into the CNCF sandbox. So another thing that takes it to the next level. This is now an official CNCF project. So we talked about only individuals are contributors, but also in terms of ownership, now the owner officially is the CNCF as part of the Linux Foundation, which gives it the foundational basis as well. Do you want to tell us anything about this major update?
Yes. So for us, and after some months, we found out that it might be a good idea to contribute this project to the CNCF, even to get more traction, to get more marketing, and also get more contributors into it. As I said before, there is no company behind it. And therefore, we started raising a sandbox request because we had enough stars, we had some adopters, as we might talk about afterwards, and Yes, we thought about, yes, it might be a good idea to get this into a sandbox, but even there, we there were some funny things around it. So at the beginning, we were in the AI space, where not really many things existed inside of the CNCF. And on the other side, we were a very young project, which was even for a sandbox project, it was very young. Therefore, the first response we got after some time was, yes, let's wait another half a year until let's see if the project still exists. So if you said before for an open source project, 1 year is pretty long. And yes, therefore the sandbox process took us a bit longer. So I think in September we got accepted. And also then we had another step of new contributors, of more stars and so on. And therefore we are very proud of being a CNCF project. And let's see where all of this goes.
Yeah, and you mentioned adopters. So tell us a bit about the who is it? Who are the adopters that you see using this, just to get a sense of the how it's being put to use?
So the first thing I wanted to say is we don't even know who all adopts us, as I've learned at KubeCon. So one thing I saw at KubeCon at one point in time in the KubeGPT Slack channel was that someone is talking about KubeGPT local models and the integrations in platforms. So I think this was a lightning talk. And
one of the benefits of going to KubeCon, that you get to meet the community and suddenly you find out, hey, this guy is using my my project. I didn't even know about it.
Yes, and we weren't really aware of that. So this was the first touching point with this company. So this company was Kubernetes. So they are building a Kubernetes platform and they are integrating KubeGPT in their app store and so on. And I think also in their CLIs, they have KubeGPT pre-installed. And I think 1 or 2 days later, we had our booth at KubeCon. And I was also looking for people who want to support me there and so on. And then I got to know this guy who talked about the project. And the cool thing was 10 minutes before we had our shift at the booth, we talked to each other. I asked him if he wants to join us and so on. And he joined me at the booth for the rest of the day. And we had a really funny time there. And now he always contributes to KubeGPT.
So 10 minutes before you didn't even know he existed and that his company uses that Kubermatic. And 10 minutes after, he's already on the booth duty.
I like this very much. And that's also why I talk about this. So I like to talk about this, but we also have other adopters. So one of the first adopters we had was Spectro Cloud. So they also integrated KubeGPT somewhere. And I heard about some adopters which are called NetHopper and Upstage. And I know from some other companies, also from an Austrian company, which is integrating KubeGPT into the platform, so the operator itself. They also provided a backstage plugin for it and so on. I think that KubeGPT is often used out in the wild, but I'm also pretty sure that we don't know about everyone.
Yeah, but anyway, if you are using, if you do use KubeGPT in one of your systems, feel free to reach out and let the community know. You can there is the community page within the GitHub repo. You can just open an issue and offer to update the page to add your details there, or just reach out to Thomas, do you want to tell people actually, by the way, how they can reach out to you, how they can follow you?
Yes, so I'm available, I think, almost everywhere. So at LinkedIn, at Twitter and so on. I think the hashtag is always, the handle is always the same. So it's THSCHUE, I think. Yes, and I'm always very excited to hear about where I use KubeGPT, where I use Captain and so on. What I also wanted to say, if you are using KubeGPT and you like it, let us share your stories. So we also have in our community repo, I think, an issue type for success stories or whatever. And if you raise an issue there, we will also promote this and try to make people aware of KTGPT and that it's used in production, although it's a sandbox project at the moment.
Yeah, I just shared the link with the people in the live chat. I'll also share that, obviously, with the listeners for the on the podcast show notes, with the community link on the GitHub repo. And it's always a challenge because as open source projects, unlike vendors, we can't put telemetry collectors and dial home features and things like that. That's not really ethical. And that makes it much harder to know who uses the project. I can tell you even much, much more advanced projects like OpenTelemetry that I'm involved with that now is part of the graduation process from incubation into CNCF graduation, that we're trying to encourage more of the end users to share how they use that they use it. First of all, that they use it and how they use it and get more data in support of the application to graduation, CNCF graduation. So definitely a challenge. And anyone out there that does use the project, do feel free to share that to support the project's case, I guess. Talking about that, who's behind the project? Can you tell us a bit about, we talked about obviously Alex Jones, who started it, and you joining the second. But to date, who are the maintainers, contributors, maybe even if there are any entities behind it or anyone else involved?
So there are, as I said before, there are contributors from many different companies. So I think at the moment we have around 30 to 40 contributors in the project. Seriously active. Normally, I think there are between 5 and 10 at the moment, so continuously. And there are, we have kind of an interesting governance model. So we have some sub-projects like SKGPT itself, the operator and so on. And there are different maintainers per sub-project. So it's what we wanted to ensure is that people can evolve in the project, can step up the ladder very easily. And at the moment, I think we have at each sub project around 2 to 3 additional maintainers to Alex and me. And yes.
Nice. Maybe before we run out of time, I do want to leave a time for you to talk about what's on the roadmap, what's expected for the project.
Yes. So what we are focusing on at the moment is that we try to get integrations into cloud provider infrastructure such as Amazon, Google, and so on to find problems more on the infrastructure level. A second thing we have on the roadmap at the moment are things as scanning CRDs, so also the integration part and so on. We also try to integrate with additional tooling on the in the AI landscape and so on, but also from a sync perspective to send information not only to Slack but also to Teams, MetaMost, and whatever. And we always have more ideas, such as at one point I thought it would be really cool to trace it back to trace problems back to the source code and raise a pull request. But as this is only a pet project or a side project for me, it's always hard to find time for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's pretty ambitious to close the loop with automatically opening the issue on the root cause that you found in the source code. But if we get to that level of maturity, that's good. That'd be really cool. But yeah, some ideas for people who want to join the project and contribute and maybe have some experience that they contribute in this area. If you do want to find out more on the project and join the conversation, KTGPT has its own Slack workspace as well as the Slack channel on the CNCF workspace, Slack workspace, KTGPT, as the name would suggest. So I'll put the links for both the Kate's GPT workspace and for this one. And join us. Thomas, thank you so much for sharing this exciting project. And I think we tried to talk about before about which other projects are in the space, and looking left and right, we actually couldn't find many other projects on this field. So I guess it's really a blue ocean in many senses of the way of the word. And great to see this, especially as part of the CNCF ecosystem. By the way, listeners, if you are aware of more projects that we missed in our research, do feel free to chime in on the Twitter of the show, Open Observe on X or Twitter, and share with us some of your insights and your maybe other projects that you found. But at least we couldn't find some things along that same vein. So Thomas, thank you so much for joining me on this episode.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, I want to thank all our listeners who've been joining us on this episode. As always, you can find all the episodes on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube. And if you are listening for that now on these platforms, do know that we stream the episodes live on Twitch and YouTube Live and on X. So if you do want to join the live stream, where you can also chime in on the live chat, do follow us on Twitter at OpenObserve, where we post the live stream times, or follow me, myself, at Horovitz on Twitter, Mastodon, LinkedIn, whatnot. And definitely happy to have more questions from the audience on the live stream. So thank you very much for listening, and see you on next month's episode. And as always, as we say, may the open source be with you.